Hey, everybody. So this week, I am so excited to welcome Brother Frank Himmel with me. Frank and Sandy were with the Manslick Road congregation from 1998 to 2008. And since then, I know their legacy and so much of their teaching and influence has lived on at Manslick. Frank, tell the congregation briefly what all's going on in your and Sandy's lives.
Well, it's good. First of all, hello, everybody. It's good to see you all again. We think about you just every little bit. And it's really, really great to have this opportunity to talk to you a little bit. Sandy and I are fine. We're just doing well. As most of you know, I had a bout with lymphoma several years ago, but that seems to be all over with, all the treatment's over with. Just go back for every 3 months now for checkups, but those are non-events, so that's good. The only real outcome of it is my different look up top now than from what I used to have, but that's really okay. It was all starting to fall out anyway, so I'm not going to blame it on cancer. So it's good. But we're feeling fine. We're doing well. Wanda's still here with us, and she's doing okay. My dad passed away almost a year ago now, but Mama's still living, and she's doing okay. So everything's just fine with us. The girls are, the granddaughters are growing up so much. The oldest one's going to be graduating from high school this year, going off to college. So a lot of time's passed. It's hard to believe it's been 12 years since we were at Manslick, but it's coming up on that. So we're all doing fine. Hope you all are too.
Well, thanks so much, Frank. To take our minds to scripture then, you had presented a lesson a couple of months ago back at your home congregation on He Went a Little Farther. Mm-hmm. I've had a chance to listen to it, and this was a little phrase in the Gospels that I've read many times but have never thought much of. Can you start telling us what this phrase means and where it comes from and how it applies to Jesus?
Sure. First of all, I wish I could take credit for the sermon, but I really can't. My grandfather was a preacher, and when he died, I inherited a little box of handwritten sermon outlines that were his, and I've thumbed through it a time or two and just kind of shoved it off in the closet. And I got it out a few months ago and I was thumbing through it, and I saw this handwritten outline just with this title on it, that He Went a Little Farther. And it just caught me right away. I knew right away where it came from and what the reference was. The reference is in Matthew chapter 26, when Jesus and Peter and James and John went to the garden to pray the night before his crucifixion. And Jesus stopped with the disciples and asked them to pray with him. And then the text says that he went a little farther. King James and New King James say that. He went a little beyond them. Luke's account actually says he went a stone's throw away. It's obviously a spatial reference there. But the idea of the lesson was that Jesus went a little beyond. He went a little farther, not just in terms of getting some distance from them, but to take that as a kind of a summary of his life, how that he just went a little farther in lots of different ways. And so that's kind of where the concept of the lesson was. And as I built the lesson, I tried to build it especially around the time of his crucifixion and some of the things that we see in that event. And just showing, of course, further is actually the technical word here, but just showing how he went further with things than we typically do. And as his example, we need to do better, and we need to move closer to the direction he's going. So that was kind of the essence of the lesson.
Yeah. And whenever you read the account there in the Garden of Gethsemane, as you said, it's very obvious that he physically goes a bit farther than where the other disciples were. But then when you think of that spiritually, Jesus, God in the flesh, came not just to live a life of a human, but he came to live the perfect life. And right. So he really did live a life that went perhaps even a bit more than a little, but quite a bit farther. Yeah. So what are some ways then spiritually that Jesus went a little farther?
Well, some of the points that I made in the lesson, one of the things that I talked about was that he went farther with prayer, for example. That's what was going on at the time of the lesson. And of course, Jesus prayed often. The scriptures emphasize that. They talk about him going out early in the morning to pray, talk about him going away to a secluded place to be by himself to pray. Sometimes he'd go in the mountain and pray all evening. So obviously, just from a time perspective, prayer was very important to Jesus. And I'm ashamed to say it, but more so than it is to me. He spent obviously a lot more time with it. But I tried to emphasize from the text that not only did Jesus go further in terms of the time that he devoted to prayer, but also the intensity of the prayer. And that really comes out in the garden scene when Luke especially depicts the intensity with which Jesus is praying, the sweat drops his blood. And when you read that and just pause and think about it, you really get a sense of someone who is just totally engrossed in the situation and really pouring his heart out to God. And I think that intensity is sometimes lost with us a little bit too. Prayer tends to be kind of just some things that we say, and we mean them. I'm not suggesting we don't, but James talked about the fervent prayer, and sometimes maybe our prayers are a little lacking in fervency about them, and Jesus certainly gave us a great illustration in that. So that was one area that we talked about in the lesson.
So Frank, taking this now to our area of application for us who are disciples of Jesus Christ, what does it mean in our own lives to pray fervently, to go a bit farther in prayer? How do we actually do that?
I think part of it is just to get away from the idea of prayer being a recitation of some expressions that we've heard over and over again. I love the statement Paul makes in Romans 10 when he says regarding his fellow Israelites that his heart's desire and his prayer to God for them is for their salvation. And that's really what prayer is. It's a pouring out of our heart's desire. And I think if we would maybe even abandon to some extent some of the very structured, familiar language that we use in prayer and just really talk to God reverently, but talk to him really from our hearts and say it the way we would say it and the way we would appeal to a father, a child appealing to a father or something. I think it might help us to appreciate just really prayer a little bit better.
Yeah. And I think especially, I mean, you and I are talking on March 31st of 2020, and I know your state has been hit by COVID-19, probably even greater than Kentucky has. What about your area that you're living in?
Our Northwest Louisiana, where we are, has had some measure. I think we've got between 50 and 60 cases in our parish. We have parishes instead of counties. Shreveport, which adjoins us, they have 200 or 300. The biggest pocket in Louisiana, obviously, is New Orleans. It's been a really hot spot for it. But yes, there's a good bit here. And it's a time that the president's called on us to pray. It's a natural time for us to be praying, and we're concerned about that. We're concerned about the economic effects of all this and all of it. But at the same time, we need to have confidence, too, and trust in our God. And that needs to be expressed in the things that we say.
Absolutely.
So we're trying to talk.
And I think as we look at the trials that we're going through as people, as family, as churches, as states, whatever it may be, this is such a natural time for us to go a bit farther in prayer if we haven't been, is for our hearts to really get poured out before the throne of God and really to take ourselves before Jesus.
Sure.
So what about sacrifice? That was another aspect that you discussed in the sermon. How did Jesus go farther in sacrifice?
Well, we talked about that in the sermon. Sacrifice is kind of by definition is giving up something of value for something else. And sometimes we think of it as giving up something of value for something of greater value. Jesus' sacrifice began with just coming to the earth. I think about his prayer in John 17. Where he asked the Father to restore him to the glory that he had with the Father before he had come to the earth. And that's one of those things, I think, until we get to heaven, we really don't know what that means.
Yeah.
I mean, until we can actually experience what that is to be there in the presence of God. That's an aspect of sacrifice that we'll just never really appreciate in this life. And so the Lord gives that up to come to earth and become a man, and then to live the kind of life that he had to live. Isaiah called him a man of sorrows. And there was a lot of disappointment. There were a lot of challenges. There was a lot of opposition. It was a difficult life that Jesus sacrificed to come and lead. But then, of course, in the context of this lesson, as we were focusing on the crucifixion, it comes to its culmination in the garden scene, and then the next day at the cross. And that goes far beyond any sacrifice that we're ever going to make. Of course, Romans 12 teaches us to be living sacrifices. And we have that spirit of being willing to give all and yield all to the Lord. But Jesus just teaches us in reality what sacrifice can mean. It's the giving totally of self, and whatever that entails is, well, that's whatever it entails for us.
It is. And you think then through the application to Peter, James, and John, who were asleep when Jesus comes back. Yet after the resurrection, each of them give their lives for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that memory of Gethsemane resonated in their minds. I think the Hebrew author, as you pointed out in the sermon, definitely had it in mind whenever he talks about the prayers of Jesus and all that meant. So the prayer in the garden had to have had great weight to the early disciples to see this was when Jesus was getting himself ready for sacrifice. And I think for us as Christians in the 21st century, we perhaps don't think of giving our lives for the sake of the Lord. To the same degree that the early disciples did in a time of persecution, but sacrifice is the call of every Christian, and each of us have to embody that. How can we embody that way of Jesus by going a little further or farther? I don't know what to say now, Frank.
Well, I studied that out. Actually, farther is the spatial or the difference word. Further is when you take something to the next level.
Okay, great. So okay. Let's do further.
There's our English lesson for today.
Thank you very much. I had no idea. But with sacrifice, how do we go a little farther? How do we go a little further?
I think we stop trying to look at any specific requirement and how hard that may be for me. We just develop the mentality that, you know, whatever the Lord wants, well, that's what we do. And we, the fundamental principle is the yielding of our spirits to His. That's what Jesus talked about, discipleship. You know, the putting Him above, denying self and following Him. And so that's where it really begins. It really begins with a commitment up front that whatever I'm called on to do here, then I'm going to find a way to do it. And I'm not going to complain about it, because this is my way of serving. I think it's interesting that in passages in the book of Acts, as the disciples are persecuted, flogged or whatever it might be, the text says they went out rejoicing, because they were considered worthy to suffer for the name of Christ. Mm-hmm. And that really says they'd captured that spirit of whatever it takes, that's okay.
Sure. So your next domain of application in the sermon was to humility, which is ironic because you go a bit further in humility. So what does that make you? But how did Jesus go a bit further with humility?
Well, the whole concept of humility, and I think we talked from Philippians 2 in the sermon in that passage, which really kind of sums up so much of this, although with the humility point, I think I actually went to the upper room meeting and the washing of the feet with the disciples, which had taken place right before this prayer incident. The point of the humility was that Jesus was willing to just put self totally aside and think of others. He's thinking, first of all, of course, of the Father and doing the Father's will. And then he's thinking of others and doing for them. And so in the context of the account in John, as Jesus gathers with the disciples, in the upper room, and the disciples are arguing among themselves as to which one is the greatest. Again, Luke tells us that. And Jesus, sitting there with the disciples, observes that no one had bothered to wash feet, which was a customary practice of hospitality. And Jesus was listening to the disciples arguing about greatness. And so he got up, got the towel, got the water, and went around washing the disciples' feet. And it wasn't about clean feet, of course, on that occasion. It was about teaching them the lesson of service and the lesson of humility. Because as long as they were arguing about greatness, that kind of pride always gets in our way, and it's always going to lead to division. And the Lord wanted the disciples united and working together. He knew, especially in his absence, how critical it was going to be for them to do that. And so he taught them the lesson of service, and he said, you call me Lord and Master, but if the Master can serve, then I've done this to give you an example that you should do this as well. So humility becomes, it's not about me. It's not about what I want. It's not about what's comfortable for me or what feeds my ego or something. It's just all about how can I serve? How can I make things better for other people? And Jesus taught that in the upper room meeting the night before. But then, of course, he really taught it the next day when he went to the cross. The ultimate act of humility. Because as he noted at his arrest, he could have called down angels for his protection if that's what it was all about. But it wasn't. It was about service. And so that was the point of Jesus exemplifying that servant mentality, which is based in humility. And then, you know, obviously the application to us is just to quit thinking about how everything affects me and start thinking about other people.
Yeah, and one thing that you brought up both in the sermon and just now that I never really thought through is humility is not just a virtue or a quality, it's a verb. And when you look at that passage in Philippians 2, it says in verse 8, being found in human form, Jesus humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death. And that, I think, is what Jesus is teaching us with humility is, humility is not just a static quality in our lives, but it's an action of putting others before ourselves, of putting others' needs and wants and desires before my own. And of course, it's connected so much to the sacrifice aspect that you discussed earlier.
Sure.
Which leads us naturally to our next one, obedience. How did Jesus go a little further with obedience?
Well, Paul makes the point in Philippians 2 that he humbled himself becoming a servant. And then he says he was obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Obedience, again, starts in humility. But obedience says, I'm going to take God at his word. And if he tells me to do this, this is what I'm going to do. The author of Hebrews says that Jesus learned obedience by the things that he suffered. And to me, that suggests that he learned what the full implications of obedience can be and how difficult obedience can be. Look, when the Lord was in the garden praying, let this cup pass from me, he was clearly being tempted to try to find some other way out, if there was some other way out. But obedience called for what he did. Humility called for what he did. Service called for what he did. And he knew that, and so he carried that out. I think Paul's point in Philippians 2 of saying that he was obedient unto death, even death on the cross, shows just how far, how difficult obedience can be sometimes. Because sometimes we're told to do things that are hard. They're hard because they don't come naturally to us. They're hard because of the implications of them. But obedience says, this is what God wants me to do, and so this is what I need to do. And Jesus taking it all the way to the point of being crucified, which was one of the most humiliating, painful kinds of death that anybody could ever envision. If obedience meant that for him, then I'm not going to be surprised if there's occasions where obedience means something hard for me to do. But I need to learn that lesson from the Lord.
Absolutely. And I mean, the way of the cross is not the easy way. It's the narrow way. And whenever you were talking about the nature of obedience and in reference to that Hebrews 5 passage, at Manzik, we've talked quite a bit about being priests, kings, that image from Revelation 1 and 5, et cetera, the last year or so. And in Hebrews 5, that's what the Hebrew author is explaining, is Jesus did not exalt himself, but he humbled himself, and God then exalted him because of his obedience. And that is so countercultural, because we are taught to glorify, to exalt, to have pride in all that we do. But the way of Jesus is weird, because when you think about God himself became flesh, he didn't come with great costs, and he didn't come with great glory of man, but he came with a cross. And that, I think, really exemplifies for us just what the nature of obedience is going to be.
Sure.
Which takes us very naturally then to our next one, is suffering. How did Jesus go a little farther with suffering?
Well, the suffering aspect of things kind of ties a lot of it together, and that the Lord was willing to accept the consequences of whatever humility and obedience and all of those things brought together. The author of Hebrews in chapter 12 goes to Jesus' example. He's writing to Christians who are suffering, and he reminds them, first of all, of the Old Testament examples of men and women of faith. That's the great cloud of witnesses in Hebrews 12:1 that we're surrounded with. So he said, let's lay aside every encumbrance and the sin that so easily entangles us. So let's run with endurance the race that's set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus. And then he points out that Jesus, in view of what was set before him, in view of his opportunity to return to the Father, in view of his place at the right hand of God, in view of everything that was awaiting, for the joy set before him, he said, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of God. And then he says in verse 3, now you've not resisted to the point of shedding blood. So what he's doing is he's calling upon us to look at Jesus and the level of suffering, the level of opposition, the level of hardship, the level of challenge that he faced, and said, you keep looking at that. And that's a particularly relevant point for our time right now. Part of how we're dealing with all this right now is I'm doing some videos on the Psalms for the folks here. And I'm just trying each week to try to keep the focus on Jesus. And we keep going back to that, because if we can do that, if we can, every time we have some kind of a problem, but we tend to magnify our own problems. They're so big, you know, it's the biggest thing anybody's ever faced. No, it isn't. If I can think about Jesus, if I can do what the author of Hebrews says and focus on him and think about what he suffered, but think about his perspective for the joy set before him, he endured all that, then I'll be able to do the same thing. And then Paul's words in Romans 8 that the glory that's coming is such that the sufferings of this time aren't even worthy to be compared with that. That helps me a lot to just kind of put things in perspective and say, you know, whatever I'm facing, I got to find a way to deal with this, because the Lord dealt with a whole lot more. And if I focus on him, that helps a lot.
Absolutely, yeah. Andy Bard has been teaching through 2 Corinthians this past quarter, and so much of what you've talked through this whole thing has been reminding me of Paul's approach to life in 2 Corinthians. And especially when it comes to suffering, that is so against anything the world teaches us. You go through any of the virtues list of any of the great philosophers of history, no one has ever said suffering a virtue that we are to go farther with. It's something that you're to put off for the sake of your own happiness. But whenever we embody the way of Jesus, it's putting ourselves out there. It's giving up of our own selves, our own spirits, so that we could suffer. taking us then to our very last one, which I think really ties all this together. And you said Jesus went a little further with love.
He did. And this was kind of the culmination of the whole thing, because the Paul writes in Romans 5 that the reason that the Lord did that is it's because of his love. He said that you might find a good man for whom someone would be willing to die. Even that's kind of an unusual circumstance, but you might find that. You might find people who put their lives on the line for others out of a sense of duty or just general humanity. But Paul emphasizes in Romans 5 that God demonstrates his own love toward us, and that while we are yet sinners, Christ died for us. And then he uses the word enemy a couple of words later, while we are enemies of God. And so Jesus took the love concept even further. He's not just dying for a good man. He's not just dying for the sake of duty. He's dying out of his love for people who are God's enemies, trying to make something different out of them. And then, of course, he teaches us in the fifth chapter of Matthew, at the end of the chapter, he said, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemies. And he teaches us that same principle, that love needs to spring from our hearts and not be dependent on how somebody else is or isn't behaving. It's all about trying to take somebody and make them better. And it goes back to that humility and service and all those kinds of things that Jesus so clearly exemplified on the cross.
Yeah, it's so funny that you just quoted the Matthew 5 passage, because for the last 10 minutes, my Bible's been open to Matthew 5. Yeah. In verse 43, he says, you shall love your neighbor. And immediately before this, he says in verse 41, this is Matthew 5, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. And that seems to be the very heart of what Jesus teaches us here, is even in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus himself taught by example in Gethsemane, but by mouth in the Sermon on the Mount, we as Christians have to go a little further.
That's right. With the second mile, we use that expression a lot, go the second mile. And that was, and you could call this sermon that, go on the second mile, because that's exactly what Jesus did in all of these things. And it just, again, it kind of goes back to where our hearts are, because we tend to look at something and say, well, that's not fair, or that's awfully demanding of me, or whatever. And we just need to start, change the way we look at things a little bit.
Amen. Yeah. Well, Frank, thank you so much for joining me. I really hope that this time of COVID-19 is a time that each of us as Christians examine our own selves, try to think about our own service, our own heart for God. And you have reminded us so well, just the amazing call of Jesus, that each of us have to go a little farther in this life. And whatever we're lacking in now, that's what we need to keep improving on in the coming days. Anything to say as we close out here, Frank?
I don't think so. Thanks for the invite. It was great to be able to chat with you a little bit. And your point is very well taken, that during this time, during any kind of time, it's just so important for us to maintain our focus. And what we need to do is just remember who and what we are. And regardless of the circumstances, whether they're tough times like these are right now, or more pleasant times, we're all about serving God, regardless of the circumstances. And that's just keep right on doing what we do.
Amen. Well, Frank, thank you again so much for joining me. And thank you so much for reminding us all that we need to go a little farther. Thanks again.
Thank you, Ryan. And God bless to all of you at Manslick Road.